speaking via video and through an interpreter to the Australian government, Ukraine's president said the war in his country had broader implications.
The fate of the global security is decided now.
Plus, what may Russia hope to secure as its foreign minister travels to China?
Russia is becoming increasingly reliant on China. Of course, given the extent of the sanctions that are being imposed on Russia by the U.S. and by Europe, the role of China, the trading partner for Russia, is indispensable. And other countries like India also play an important role.
And later in the program, a Ukrainian TikToker who documented her journey to safety. Today is Thursday, March 31st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Thursday that his country's defense against the Russian invasion was at a turning point and again pressed the United States for more help. Speaking via video link and through an interpreter to the Australian government on Friday, Zelensky said Russia had to be stopped.
If we don't hold Russia accountable, then some other countries of the world who are looking forward to the similar war against their neighbors will decide that such things are possible for them as well. The fate of the global security is decided now.
He also repeated a call for support and assistance. British defense officials have confirmed that Russia is continuing to pound the Ukrainian city of Chernihiv. AP correspondent Karen Chamas has that part of the story.
British authorities have said that significant Russian shelling and missile strikes have continued in the northern Ukrainian city. The aggression continues despite Russia's assurance that it would de-escalate operations in Chernihiv and near Kiev. Britain also reported that Russia still held positions to the east and west of Kiev, despite the withdrawal of a limited number of units. It also believes that heavy fighting will likely take place in the suburbs of the capital in coming days. I'm Karen Chamas.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Thursday, Russian forces in Ukraine are not withdrawing, but regrouping. And Russian bombardment of areas around Kyiv and intensified attacks elsewhere in the country further undermine hopes for progress toward ending the bloody conflict that has devolved into a war of attrition. Zelensky also added that Ukrainian forces are preparing for new Russian attacks in the southeast region, where Moscow's guns are now trained after its assault on the capital of Kyiv has been repelled. Moscow says it is now focusing on, quote, liberating the Donbass region and says it launched a special military operation to disarm and, quote, denazify, end quote, its neighbor, and that the mission is going to plan. Western countries say the invasion was an unprovoked war of aggression and that Russia's true aim was to swiftly topple the government in Kyiv and that its failure has been a strategic catastrophe, bringing economic ruin and diplomatic isolation. Talks between Ukraine and Russia have been set to resume on Friday via video, according to the head of the Ukrainian delegation. There seemed little faith that Russia and Ukraine will resolve the conflict soon, particularly after Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi said Russian President Vladimir Putin told him the conditions were not yet in place for a ceasefire. On Friday, Russia said that it would allow a humanitarian corridor to evacuate stranded civilians from Mariupol. Ukraine's Deputy Prime Minister, Irina Verevchuk, said that she received word from the International Committee of the Red Cross that 45 buses were on their way and that the Russian Federation is ready to open access for a humanitarian convoy to the city of Mariupol with transit through the city of Berdansk. The Mariupol mayor said this week that up to 170,000 residents were still trapped there with no power and dwindling supplies. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies are also warning of a burgeoning health crisis in Ukraine, which is likely to last longer than the conflict itself. Lisa Schlein has more.
Francesco Rocca, president of the Red Cross Federation, recently visited Ukraine and Romania to see conditions in the region since Russia's military invaded Ukraine 5 weeks ago. He says no one in Ukraine is left unscathed by the ongoing conflict. He estimates 18 million people, or one-third of the population, will require humanitarian assistance. Additionally, he says about 6.5 million displaced people inside the country and more than 4 million refugees in neighboring countries will need international aid. He expresses particular concern about what he sees as an emerging health crisis. He says millions of people no longer have access to medical care and treatment because of attacks against hospitals, ambulances, and medical personnel. The World Health Organization says more than 70 healthcare facilities have been attacked. Some have been destroyed. At least 71 people have been killed and 37 injured. Rocha says violence has discouraged many people from leaving the safety of their bunkers to seek healthcare.
Many are also cut off from regular access to clean water, leaving them at an elevated risk of infectious diseases. People who are on the move are also at greater risk, as living conditions can be overly crowded and access to proper water and sanitation facilities lacking. Outbreaks of respiratory and waterborne diseases are highly likely.
Federation President Rocha says Red Cross volunteers are working to rehabilitate and provide safe toilets and shower facilities. He says they are distributing water and hygiene supplies.
Across the county, volunteers are providing first aid and psychosocial support, transporting people to hospital, helping to reunite families through the Red Cross hotline, and delivering humanitarian aid to bomb shelters, medical facilities, and temporary accommodation for those who are displaced.
Rocha notes Red Cross volunteers themselves are affected by the conflict. Many, he says, have lost homes, communities, and loved ones. Despite their personal grief and the many dangers, he says they continue to do what they can to aid and comfort victims of this terrible war. Since the beginning of the war on February 24th, he says Red Cross volunteers have assisted more than 400,000 people across Ukraine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Turkish-made drones have featured prominently in Ukraine's resistance against Russia's invasion, taking out significant Russian targets in the first few weeks of the war. But the conflict and any possibility of a Russian victory have cast a shadow over the future of Turkey's rapidly growing drone industry, which relies on Ukrainian engines. Dorian Jones explains.
Videos released by the Ukrainian military, a Turkish-made Bayraktar drone destroys a Russian tank to the cheers of the drone operators. But with the Bayraktar drone powered by Ukrainian engines, Samuel Bennett of the U.S.-based Center for Naval Analysis warns any Russian victory in Ukraine could set back Turkey's rapidly growing drone industry.
Russia sees Bayraktars, TB2s in particular, as a highly competitive weapon and technology, in not just in the former Soviet space, but in the global unmanned aerial vehicle market. Russians are nervous that Bayraktars are penetrating former Soviet space and the Caucasus and Central Asia, now Ukraine. And so if Russians were to sort of exercise the full extent of their powers in the outcome of the negotiations, they would probably seek to limit Ukrainian military cooperation with Turkey so as not to further Turkish growing advantage in certain technologies like UAV.
Ukraine not only provides cutting-edge engine know-how, but also it does not put restrictions on Turkish companies selling to third parties. Turkish drone use in conflicts like the Ethiopian Civil War has drawn international criticism from rights groups. James Rogers, assistant professor in war studies at the University of Southern Denmark, says the Turkish drone industry would not have the same freedom of use if it turned to its Western allies for engines.
There are more restrictions when you deal with UK, European or American suppliers, and that's something that Turkey will most definitely have to keep in mind. We know that the United States has been very select about who it sells drones and drone elements to around the world. It's one of the reasons why Turkey started its entire indigenous drone program, because Congress would not approve the sales of Reaper Predator generation medium altitude long endurance drones to Turkey.
Earlier this year, a prominent Turkish military helicopter deal with Pakistan collapsed over Washington's restriction on use of American engines. In addition, Congress has been enforcing increased controls on the supplies of military components to Turkey over Ankara's purchase of Russia's S-400 made missile defense system. While UNCRA has received praise from Washington over its support of Ukraine, Aaron Stein, director of research at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, expects little change in Washington's stance towards Turkey.
The one side is that Turkey is hostile to the United States. It's no longer an ally, it's an adversary, and we should be treating it as such. And then on the other side, it's we misunderstand Turkey. Turkey needs a big hug because they're so important. The government is usually somewhere in the middle, and then usually current events sort of reinforce positions on either side.
Given the challenges of finding an alternative to Ukrainian engines, Turkey's drone industry will likely look for drones to thwart Moscow's ambitions and secure both Kyiv and its future. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. In China, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov continued his meetings with officials on Thursday. So, what does Russia hope to get out of the visit to China? That's something I discussed with Anastasia Fedek, who teaches at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley.
That Russia is becoming increasingly reliant on China. Of course, given the extent of the sanctions that are being imposed by on Russia by the U.S. and by Europe, the role of China as a trading partner for Russia is just indispensable. And other countries like India also play an important role, and you see this in Lavrov's schedule of stops. But large customers like China, like India, they're continuing to purchase Russian products, and this is what is partially allowing Russia to sustain its economy despite the strong sanctions by the West.
You mentioned kind of sustaining its economy despite the sanctions from the rest, but we've seen the ruble drop tremendously in value. And while China is the second largest economy in the world, there is a huge unified effort by the United States and its allies to cut Russia from these things. So how viable is it to keep, I guess, long-term the Russian economy going?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, with the ruble, we've seen the drop and then we've seen the rebound. And I think many things have gone into that rebound. Part of it is expectations. When the initial drop happened, and that was a very precipitous drop, that was in response to existing sanctions as well as expectations of additional sanctions, including oil embargoes. Some of those have come to pass, some of those not. So part of the rebound is possibly investors. Expectations having been worse than what actually happened to Russia. But part of it is also Russia attempting to prop up its currency in all ways possible, some of which are working more than others. But selling a large part of its exports to countries like India and China, I think, has helped with that. And that is part of the reason that we are seeing ruble recovering a little bit. In the long term, I think the damage to the Russian economy is quite clear. Now, of course, it depends on how long the sanctions last and how long the West is able to maintain some of these sanctions and embargoes. But assuming that things stay in place at least somewhat, I think that the long-term effect on the Russian economy is going to be quite pronounced. In the short term, though, having access to a trading partner like China is very helpful for Russia to stay afloat.
Speaking of staying afloat, I wanted to ask you more about sanctions, because one of the topics has been banning or embargoing Russian energy products, Russian gas, Russian oil. And the president of the United States announced that it is releasing, the U.S. is releasing additional oil from reserves. But countries in Europe are still dependent largely on Russian energy products and are still having to pay, whether it be in dollars or euros, despite Russia requesting rubles for payment, which is not going to happen, according to EU officials. So I guess my question to you is this, is how effective are sanctions if money is still going into Russia because of energy payments made by European countries?
And I think that's exactly the right question to ask, because there is an effect, but it's going to be a longer-term effect. These energy exports are the only things that are actually going to have a somewhat immediate to short-term effect. Now, as I mentioned, economically, I think that most academic economists actually agree that the impact on countries like Germany from doing an embargo on Russian oil are not as great. The politicians disagree, and we've been watching some of their kind of debates between the economists and the German politicians within the last week. But there are also different tools. So there can be a complete embargo that doesn't have to be. There can be a reduction in the consumption. There can also be, say, heavy tariffs. So right now, Russia is still it's selling less to Western countries. It's selling more to, say, China and India. India is now purchasing Russian oil at a discount. So some of that benefit does go to developing countries like India.
And one last question, and I know it's difficult, but looking at the conflict today, what are some possible ramifications moving forward?
Yeah, that's a tough question. And sometimes we hear some optimistic days where people speak about Ukraine winning, and I sometimes struggle to kind of envision what would be a real win in a conflict like this. The destruction is huge in Ukraine. The destruction of trust is huge throughout the world. Even if there is an agreement reached that is relatively okay for Ukrainian people, it's going to be difficult to trust Russia not to do this again, given that they started invading in 2014. They had a pause on that, and now they're back full force in 2022.
Anastasia Fedek is a professor at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking to you, too.
European Union and Chinese leaders will hold their first summit in nearly 2 years on Friday, with the Ukraine conflict expected to dominate the meeting, which is being held by video link. Lisa Bryant has this preview.
Plans for a European Union-China summit were already laid before Russia invaded Ukraine last month, although Beijing's formal announcement it would attend only came this week. On the agenda are issues like climate change, trade, and what the EU describes as universal values. But the Ukraine conflict tops it. China casts itself as a neutral party to the Ukraine conflict, while Beijing says it's grieved by the war. These messages aren't new, but they offer an awkward backdrop for Friday's virtual summit between Chinese President Xi Jinping, Prime Minister Li Keqiang, and top EU officials Ursula von der Leyen and Charles Michel. Lisa Bryant for VOA News.
Taiwan's defense ministry says that it's set up a working group to study the tactics of the war in Ukraine, including how the country has been able to hold out against Russia. In Taiwan, some consider the Matsu Islands the country's front line of democracy under the looming threat of its massive and more powerful neighbor, mainland China. Reuters reporter Gloria So reports residents there say that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has struck a nerve.
The Matsu Islands are just a stone's throw away from the mainland, but they've been held by Taiwan hundreds of miles away since 1949. That's when the defeated nationalist government fled after losing the mainland to the communists. Today, the islands are home to a Taiwanese missile base and would likely be an immediate target for Beijing in any case of a renewed conflict. China considers Taiwan a renegade province and has never ruled out taking it by force. For 64-year-old breakfast joint owner Lin Ji-shou, a recent flyby of a Chinese aircraft reminded him of the possibility of conflict in his own backyard.
Even if they provoke us, we still can't touch them. If they want to fly over, just let them fly. If you shoot them down, everything will be over. I'm not kidding you. It would be the start of the Third World War. It's really too scary. It wouldn't even just be us and the mainland fighting. Other countries would surely also join in the fight. Just look at the war between Russia and Ukraine. If they use atomic bombs, it'll all be over. No country would be able to escape.
The Matsu Islands were regularly bombarded by China at the height of the Cold War, and older residents say the Russia-Ukraine conflict has revived fears about their own history. But even though China has ramped up its military pressure on Taiwan in recent years, some members of the younger generation aren't as worried. Some of the abandoned bunkers that dot the coastline were transformed into tourist destinations and boutique hotels. Many young residents are more keen on preserving the island's unique culture and have worked to build up trendy small businesses and a vibrant art scene. 26-year-old Cheng Jingye is a restaurant manager who says moving there taught her why so many want to maintain the delicate status quo.
Between Taiwan and China, there's already a clear, reasonable discussion that we are different. In the past, I really wanted to stand up and emphasize this point. But after coming here, I understood why some middle-aged people didn't want to emphasize this issue. Because they're on the front lines. In case something really happens, this place might be the first to come under fire. So the people here keep saying, why do we have to keep stressing this issue?
Taiwan has raised its alert level since the Ukraine invasion, but has not yet reported any signs of an imminent attack.
Gloria So of Reuters News. And finally, Ukrainian TikToker as well as travel blogger Alina Volek spoke to Reuters News while making a new home for herself in Spain after she was forced to flee because of the Russian invasion.
It's been a wild week in Madrid and we've done a lot of important things.
My name is Alina. I'm 18 years old and I came here in Spain as a Ukrainian refugee.
Into Palacio Real, and by the way, this is my first week in Madrid.
My life really has changed because my mom and I decided to move abroad because in Ukraine it's really dangerous to live right now. Everything happened really fast and we made a decision to go right now. I'm here in Budapest for 5 days, and then I will go with my mom to Spain, and we will live there. We are staying in the host family. They are from Chile, and they have been living in Madrid for 3 years. I'm so happy and thankful to live in their family. They are very helpful, and also they have 2 children. They are so lovely. So I already feel like we are a family. Honestly, I feel very comfortable here because people are very helpful. I went to the hospital with my mom. It's like an office for Ukrainian refugees. And they gave out a free transport card in Madrid. And also they gave us a medical card. So if we get sick, we can go to the hospital as a Spanish person. I want to study here in Spain. And I already applied to some universities. And I'm waiting for their answer. I want to study marketing because I've been interested in marketing for 2 years. I studied on my own. I also had experience in marketing because in Ukraine I had like a small business. It was an Instagram store of fitness bands. So I worked on advertising. I worked with influencers. So I'm really into marketing and I want to continue my studying. Because of the war, I started appreciating not material things, but just in general that you have a peace when you just can go out like that. And you can go to the supermarket without a fear. And you can meet with your friends. And this is what most people don't appreciate, because it's like something that everyone have. But right now, it's like a treasure. All my best friends, even those who always wanted to live in Ukraine, they are left in Poland and Bulgaria. Since I moved to another country, now I'm posting my journey there, and I also will post how I will start my life from the scratch. All these obstacles that I will face, I will show this in my social media because it's really hard to start your life in abroad. This war gave me a lesson that you can't count on what you have, because everything you can either lose everything or acquire something new. I would like to visit Ukraine when the war will end. Ukraine is my home, and when I finish my studies, I also think about to go to Ukraine and maybe to contribute what I've learned here to my country.
And on that note, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage not only on Ukraine, but other news and events from around the world 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device to voanews.com. And be sure to follow our social media platforms for other updates. Just follow @VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.